overlooking Phoenix. From high above in the Star Worldwide Network studios, Badge Boys. Stories, insight, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. And now, here they are, the Badge Boys.
Welcome to another edition of the Badge Boys, where two cops talk to the community. I'm retired silent witness sergeant Darren Birch.
I'm retired Phoenix police officer Jason Schechterly.
And we have a great St. Patrick's Day episode. It's amazing because we have the Irish angel herself, and she's literally lives in Ireland, has a social media that contacts officers all over the world. And so we're going to be talking to her about all things Irish. Then we're going to go to our we're going to talk about cop talk, then heroic headlines and stupid suspects. And we'll end the episode again with the inspirational thoughts from our own Jason Schechterly. So until then, we'll be right back.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Badge Boys. We'll be back right after this.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADOT in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Badge Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Badge Boys.
Jason, I am so excited about our next guest, and you talked to me about her, and you know her as well.
I do know her as well. She follows me on social media and is so sweet to comment and like some of my posts, but she's just an incredible inspiration to law enforcement, and I love that we are going worldwide because a cop is a cop anywhere. Protecting and serving is not limited to just where we live and what we're talking about on this show, so I'm extremely excited.
Yeah, it really is family, it's a brotherhood. And so what we're talking about, the Irish angel, Amanda Coleman, and normally when we would say that, we'd be saying, all the way from Ireland, but you are here in the States, are you not, Amanda?
I am indeed. I'm here in New York.
Oh, and what are you doing in New York?
I'm here for St. Patrick's Week. Irish angel is endorsed by the Port Authority Police Department, Emerald Society. So they invited me to walk in the parade with them for Patrick's Day. Yeah, so I'm really excited.
That is exciting. We want to get into a little bit more about that. But for those who don't know you, because almost every law enforcement officer does, and just absolutely loves all you do, and we'll talk a little bit about that as well. But if you could, talk about police work in Ireland, because you have some family members that are cops, do you not?
I do indeed. I have a cousin and a brother-in-law who is in law enforcement in Ireland. It's a completely different kettle of fish in Ireland in comparison to the States. It's so funny, in more ways than one, you're very similar, obviously, because of the brotherhood and what you stand for and what you do. But Ireland is we're pretty guarded when it comes to speaking about law enforcement. You know, our officers are tied into confidentiality agreements that they cannot talk about anything that goes on within the guards, or, you know, so it's very different. That's why I suppose my following is more so in the States rather than at home, because they can't be seen to, you know, be on media sort of thing. So, you know, it's just the nature of the beast over there, unfortunately, but they're a great bunch of guys. And I have 11 of them actually coming over here tomorrow to march with me in the parade. So I'm looking forward to that.
You know, when we talk about police work, and me and Jason talk about this, just literally, you know, leading into the show, it's a brotherhood, no matter where you're at.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about police work there in terms of...
Yeah.
Please.
Yeah, it's very different in the sense of, like, in America, you guys are equipped, your training is on point, and, you know, you have absolutely everything that there is to hand to do the work that you need to do. Unfortunately, in Ireland, the crime rate is on the increase. Like, I mean, the serious crime rate of drugs and gun crime. And unfortunately, our law enforcement officers are not armed.
Wow.
Now, we have certain branches that are armed, like the detectives, and we just got a unit in about a year and a half ago there, where they're armed, but like that, our beat cops are not, you know, and they're not equipped. They have an axe and they have a little can of pepper spray, and that's about it.
Is there, Amanda, is there a difference between, and I'm pretty naive, I haven't been over there yet, it's one of my bucket list places to go spend a week, and
that place, sounds like a request for an invite.
I want to play some golf over there. Is there a difference in police work between Northern Ireland and what we all know is just as Ireland?
Yeah, they're treated as two completely different countries. So, like, the Northern Ireland still under English rule, so therefore their police officers tend to work under English law. We do have the Gardaí on the border, like, so we have the guard on Gardaí Síochána, which is the south siders, police force on one side of the border, and then there's the PNSI on the other side, and they do a lot of work together, particularly now since this whole Brexit thing is happening, and you know the dissident Republicans are stirring, and you know, like, so the cops are working together to try and target this before it gets out of hand. So that it's great to see them actually, you know, uniting and forming something positive, you know. But they're completely different. They would be armed and they're you know, they're well equipped and stuff. But unfortunately, ours aren't. And as I said, the crime rate in it's down south, particularly in Dublin, is getting ridiculous.
Would you and talk a little bit about that crime rate? I mean, when we're here in Phoenix and we talk about the crime rate, we usually go immediately to the serious aggravated assaults. Our homicide rate is way too high because we're the fifth largest city in the country, and sexual assaults. Are you talking about the same types of crime in Dublin?
Yeah, well, I'd say in the last 2 years, like, gun crime is a huge thing. Like, there's been so many deaths here through shootings. It's ridiculous. I shouldn't say here. I'm in New York. I'm so used to saying
it. Well, you're still accurate.
But it's just very different. You know, we're a tiny country. Like, we have a population of 6.5 million, and most of the country would be more rural, so you wouldn't get a lot of that, the crime happening within those counties, you know. So it's predominantly in Dublin, which is the second smallest county. So when you factor in the rate of the size of the county and then the amount of deaths, it's astonishing. Like, you know, you would never, 2 years ago, you'd never, like, if we heard of a shooting, it was like, oh my God, you know, you'd hear about it for the next 10 years. But now, from a thing, every other day you hear someone, you know, and it was gang related. There were two particular gangs, but now it seems to be filtering out into the public, where only there about 2 weeks ago, two guys who were actually friends, one shot the other one because they had a falling out, and it's ridiculous. And yes, our police officers are risking their lives on the street with stab-proof vests and no weapons, you know, and not even tasers. So, you know, I worry about our police force. As much as they're great lads, and you know, the threat is ongoing, and it's only a matter of time, you know, before something happens. And
that's a perfect segue to kind of where I want to kind of take it as it relates to PTSD. There's a lot of gun violence, like you said, and then you got the guards, and I believe they were called the guards there. They don't have guns. Unless they're in a specialty detail, the stress has got to be horrific. Can you talk a little bit about PTSD and if that is what the catalyst was that guided your organization?
Yeah, absolutely. The funny thing about it is, as I said at the beginning of the opening of the show, a lot of the guards, like, they can't talk about things, you know. It just doesn't come out because... It's what they sign up for, the agreement that they sign into. But there, about 6 months ago, a thing came out, and I know it might sound only minor in the scheme of things when you look at the size of the state, but there was 15 deaths last year through suicide of guards. And for the size of our country, it's a lot. I mean, the size of our police force, like our police force probably got about 10,000 guards, you know. So that's a lot for us.
How did the Irish make it out of the 70s and 80s? As a child growing up, all I heard about on the news was the terrorist organizations and the infighting. And I can't believe that all those years ago, there wasn't something that came out of getting the police officers armed so they could better protect themselves and the civilians.
Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know how they did it, but they did.
Wow.
The funny thing about it is when it comes to the likes of the IRA and it comes to, you know, all the terrorist organizations within Northern Ireland and from the other side, a lot of the time, you know, which in one way, the British, they deal with their own people and the Irish deal with theirs. But a lot of the time, like with the IRA, they knew when enough was enough and they would back off, you know. So it was nearly like they just knew when, not when to stop, because obviously they never really stopped. But, you know.
But there was some kind of line crossed. They would have a line, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. Like there was a force in place for that specifically. And like now, as the years go on, the intelligence is more, and you know, like they're more active, and the guards are fantastic when it comes to that kind of thing now. But years ago, there wasn't, like, we didn't have internet, we didn't have, you know, there was nothing. So it was a case of just ground intelligence, you know. So now it's a different kettle of fish because of the cyber technology, and you know they can keep on track of everything now. So it's completely different.
And speaking of psychology and PTSD and the stress, and you mentioned that 15 officers, was that committed suicide? Did I understand you correctly?
Yeah.
That is horrific number. That's, you know, like, ugh.
What time, not that it matters. I don't care if it's the last 50 years. That's too many. But what's the time frame on that?
A year.
1 year.
1 year?
Thank you. Exactly. Yeah. So talk about what you did based on that horrific number of 15 suicides in a single year with a small department and compared to some of the major cities here even.
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny. We went, I think I told you this before, Darren, we went through a phase in Ireland where when the recession hit, there was, you know, Ireland was being charged for water. We've been never charged for water. And sure, there was a public outcry and people took to the streets and they were marching on Parliament and what have you. But unfortunately, and this is what stirred me in the direction of doing what I'm doing, is my cousin is a beat guard. And, you know, when all these marches were happening, these officers were the ones being targeted. You know, the public was saying that the government was paying them, you know, giving them brown envelopes and all this kind of thing. And then they were going to the police stations and they were petrol bombing their cars. And then they were finding out where the officers lived and threatening their families. And, you know, and it really, really got bad. And I said it to my cousin, and he was like, you know, he says, we have a bad. He said, but you need to see what's happening in the States. He said, and I was like, oh, I don't understand it. He's like, there's a war on cops. And I was like, there's a war on cops? He was like, yeah. So I took to the internet and I seen what was going on, and I was horrified by it. Absolutely, I was gutted. But having said all that, when I and as much as it's really sad to see and to watch, when I seen after an officer has been killed and you see the whole country come together, like you see the brotherhood come together. And that's what steered me in the direction of helping is, you know, even after they're gone, the brotherhood's still there to help the family. And I think that's a huge thing. That really pushed me. And then the unfortunate thing then was learning through talking to all the people through social media, because as much as I'm on social media, I'm very I interact as much as I can with people. Like, I'm only one person, but I do interact as much as I can. And the more you talk to people, the more you understand them. You understand what they see. You understand their life, you know, and their troubles. And they are very troubled. And I want to be proactive in doing something, not just to become a support network morally, but to do it financially. I want to create a non-profit that was going to help you guys. There's a non-profit who I volunteered with for the last 2 years in Texas, EOPG, and they are building a facility that will treat all forms of PTSD. And they have an amazing psychologist coming on board. And so what I want to do is, one, to give back to help build this facility for PTSD, but also to really run like a scholarship thing, you know, where we can donate, you know, courses and stuff for people who are really suffering. That's the main thing, to help them financially, you know, get the help that they need.
If there's someone listening now, what is the contact for your Irish Angels, this nonprofit?
It is irishangels.info. That's the website that's up now. We are working on a new website, but the one that's there now is the original one that's just a moral support one. But at the moment, as we said, I'm over in New York right now, and we're registering as a nonprofit, and to speak everything is sorted. And then we can move forward and the new site launch. So there'll be all information on it for, you know, certain contacts that you need, any help that you need, you can reach out to any of us. You know, we'll do our best to help where we can. And it's not just, I suppose, for the PTSD. The Irish Angel, I suppose, mission is for law enforcement, EMS, firefighters and the military. It's for anyone who serves, you know, who suffers, that we provide education, awareness and resources about PTSD. We're going to be working with some fantastic organisations who have the experience to deal with all these kind of things too. So it's going to be, there'll be great things to come now from Irish Angels in the way of helping our first responders.
When I first met you on LinkedIn and I saw the irishangel.info, and I went there, and it was really like a safe haven, a closed group for police officers. Can you kind of talk about that?
Yeah, sure. I wanted to, I suppose, part of the reason that I created the Irish Angel website was, one, I never knew the impact that what I did actually helped people when I started this off. And I got inundated with mail from agencies all across the state thanking me for what I was doing, and I couldn't believe it. Like, I was like, I'm only supporting you guys, like, you know. And then SWAT HRT Ofcon 1 assigned me a call sign, an honorary call sign, which was Irish Angel. So I wanted to utilize that to make a safe haven for law enforcement or first responders and the military to come on and talk if they wanted to talk, or to reach out to us that we could find them help and what have you. And in doing so, that's where Irish Angel came from, and it's been a fantastic success. Like, you know, the website, as much as like I said, it's a moral support network. It does really well. Like, you know, people engage, and people are always contacting me, and you know, it's great. It's great to see, and you know that you have the audience there that needs the help, and that you can now help. You know, so. Going forward, it's going to be a great thing.
When you talk about this audience, a lot of cops love patches. They collect the. How about you, Jason? Do you collect the patches, the uniform patches?
Oh yeah, patches and coins. Shadow box them, hang them up. It's just something we all do. It's awesome.
And I ordered an Irish Angel patch from your website, and I got it very quickly. And I think I did two reasons. One is support you, and one is I wanted something from Ireland. I love the idea of having this little package come from Ireland, all the way from Ireland. Can you talk a little bit about that, the patch, and anything else that we can do to help you help law enforcement?
Yeah, absolutely. There's two patches. There's the sheepdog patch and the actual Irish Angel patch. But they are, the money that's raised for them is to go towards funding the center to be built for PTSD with EOPG. So that's just what I've had now on the original site. But God willing, now on the new one, there'll be a new merchandise range, a full merchandise range on it that people can buy, and you know, the money will go to a good cause. So that's all to come on the new site. So there'll be plenty on there for people. You know, there'll also be a section as well for health and well-being when it comes to the services, because you guys know. You guys know. Well, I know from talking to people, you know, but you're fit as a fiddle when you're in the police academy. And then you come out of the police academy and then, sure, you've passed everything, so you don't need to keep up with the health and fitness and, you know, that kind of thing. So on Irish Angel, we're going to have a health and nutritionist and a fitness expert as well that will be there to do blogs and, you know, to help out where they can with advice for people if needed.
I love all that mental health. You also have a section called Shenanigans, and it's a perfect, perfect title. Can you tell us about that?
You know, you've been on it.
Yes, I have.
So anybody can go on the website, anybody who supports the services or who is involved in the services. But you can go on and you can choose an anonymous name, so you don't have to put your name to it. But it's Shenanigans is just a part where you can go and upload your funny stories that happened on the job. Because I've spoken to so many officers and firefighters and what have you, and every one of them has got a funny tale to tell. You know, I could write a book.
Well, that's the next chapter. You need to write a book of these shenanigans and put them all together. Right?
But the whole thing about the website, though, is like, as much as there's like serious topics on the website and news and what have you, the shenanigans is there for people to upload funny stories. It's kind of like, I suppose, a break from the norm and just kind of gives you a little bit of lightheartedness, you know, and something that I'm sure that everybody in the services can relate to. You know, when they see these funny stories, they go, oh my God, something like that happened to me, you know, and it'll bring back a good memory.
Let's talk about that incredible parade. What's going on out there in New York City?
Yeah, like I said, the Port Authority officers have asked me to march in the parade, and the Grand Marshal for the parade is Peter King. And so I'm really looking forward to that. It's going to be an all-day event. We're going to the after party afterwards, so it's going to be great. But it'll be very different. It'll be very different for me to be on the other side of the fence, if you understand me, rather than being the onlooker. So I'm excited. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, you're in the middle of it. And there's a partnership going on out there with...
There is. At the minute, we're in talks with the Port Authority Police, and I'm helping get organized, hopefully, to bring over some of the stuff from 9/11 to put on display in Ireland, because there were so many, we have such ties to America, you know, and there was a lot of Irish killed on that horrible day, you know, and I think it's something that strengthen the bond between the country even more, so it'd be great, you know, so I'm looking forward to being involved in that.
And for those who are listening in New York or the New Jersey area, what's the information about the parade? When is it? Where? And all that good stuff.
Parade starts at 11 o'clock in New York City. So anybody who supports us all, come on out and say hello. Don't be afraid to wave your flags and, you know, pop up your banners if needs be. And we'll give you a shout. We'll give you the little wave and we'll be delighted to see everybody there. I can't wait. It's exciting.
Well, Amanda, this is Jason. I just cannot tell you how much I've enjoyed learning about this. If you know how to get a hold of me on social media, anything you got going on fundraiser-wise, especially if you have a golf tournament in Ireland, I'll be the first person to jump on
there's that invite request again.
On an airplane. I want to thank you, though, for everything you do. It's absolutely incredible. What a bright, positive light you are in this world. And on a personal note, and I think everybody out there would agree, I could listen to you talk all
I love
damn
the accent.
Day. It is unbelievable how
it's
soothing.
It's so adorable.
Like, I am so full of peace and serenity right now just from listening to your voice. So I thank you so much for being the beautiful person.
And it's a little hot, too. I'll be honest with you. It is. Let's be honest. Okay, am I right, Rockin' Robin?
Our
producer's laughing.
Yeah, her accent. I have a thing for accents, so I'm right there with you.
Yeah. Awesome. So in the 30 seconds we have left, can you again tell us, anyone who wants to support Irish Angels, what do they do?
They go to irishangel.info. All the links to social media is on there. If not, we are on every social media, I think, like Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn. So please sign up. You know, the more people that gets on there, the more knowledge that there will be getting out into the public domain. And that's the key, is to you know, basically just raise awareness for everybody, because I don't think the public realize just how much and what these servicemen and women have to go through.
Well, again, I'm going to reiterate what Jason said. Thank you so much, Amanda. I absolutely love the Irish Angel. Well, that wraps it up for that interview segment. And now we'll go to commercial. And then when we come back, we got some great cop talk.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Batch Boys. We'll be back right after this.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADOT in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Batch Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Batch Boys.
Welcome back to Batch Boys, everybody. Darren, that was an incredible segment. I still can't get over what Amanda's doing in this world, and to all of our Irish brothers and sisters out there, I'd love to be there for that parade. I mean, first of all, the Irish know how to party, how to throw a shindig, and I know that they take law enforcement very serious. We have so many spread out throughout this country. There's plenty right here in Phoenix, and you go to places like Chicago and back east, there's a ton. And so she's phenomenal. It's great listening to her. I definitely look forward to meeting her someday. But she brought up something that I think is very important for us to discuss. And it for all the law enforcement officers that are listening, but also for anybody who's related to a law enforcement officer, or PTSD does not only affect people who wear a uniform. It affects anybody. That post-traumatic stress disorder, it affects anybody who's been through a traumatic, stressful incident.
Yeah, I'm with you. The conversation we had with Amanda Coleman, the Irish Angel, was absolutely fun. It was lighthearted. But we did talk a little bit about the PTSD, which was the catalyst for her nonprofit organization. And I think that's more important now than ever before, because what we're seeing now is record number of suicide. And that's the ultimate sad statistic that really shows how big of a problem PTSD is. And I equated, I was talking to Rock and Robin before the show, back in the Vietnam days when the soldiers came back, unfortunately it was the minority rebel rousers, and again I'm not even saying that what they were doing was wrong, but they were kind of, some of them were very vocal against the soldiers coming back, and that's not who you should have been vocal against. And they were, and a lot of Vietnam veterans had a hard time coming back and transitioning back into society and had problems with PTSD. Now what we see is almost like this in law enforcement. And I'm trying to make the equation or the analogy that right now is kind of like our Vietnam. We have a lot of negativity, a lot of people that are in media, whether it's the NFL, I don't care what it is, they're doing a lot of broad painting against law enforcement, saying law enforcement is bad, this is bad, police brutality, with broad strokes. And there's nobody that hates a bad cop than a cop. So instead of doing something in a positive manner, it's almost kind of like throwback to the Vietnam days where they're just kind of being an ugly atmosphere out there. And that's why I think it's important for shows like ours and other shows where cops talk about the humanity behind the badge. And you shared with me and Robin a story that really kind of pinpoints that pain, because we all have it. You can't do this job without having a story that stays with you for the rest of your life. And sadly, for many of us who have 30 years career, we have too many of those stories. But yours really is a good story to help illustrate the pain that law enforcement sees. Do you mind sharing that?
And I'm gonna interject real quick and just let you know, when you told me that story off the air earlier, it gave me chills. So I'm sure your listening audience is going to feel
Robin,
that same chill.
It gave you tears, honey.
Yeah. Well, that too. But I had skin crawling chills when he gave me that story. So go for it.
Yeah, it's a pretty tough story. And you know, PTSD, there's not one definition of it. It's like SIDS. sudden infant death syndrome, there's not a real way to put your finger on it, and there's not one thing that is going to cause it. People have asked me why over the years I haven't had anger toward my own injuries or my own critical incident that people see on my face. And it's because I wasn't targeted by this person. He wasn't trying to hurt a police officer. He wasn't trying to hurt Jason. He made a lot of very bad choices, and he paid a heavy price for it. You do have police officers who get guns pointed at them and somebody saying, "You're not going home today." PTSD can come from that. But the story that I will never forget, and this is a lot of time what PTSD comes from, is things that you can't shake, things that stick with you. And when I was working in homicide, it's obviously a very difficult job, but you're there to do something very honorable, something very productive, and you're making a difference in this world. I just had a lot of love and passion for what I was doing. But I had one particular case where a young mother went to work and left her husband and little 3-year-old girl at home for the evening, and the husband wanted to play video games, then he didn't want to be disturbed, and this 3-year-old girl, of course, wanted some attention.
What all 3-year-olds do.
Yeah, and they deserve it. I mean, I know kids can get annoying. I got 3 of them, and they're annoying in their 20s, let alone when they were 3. But he wanted to play video games, and he locked her in her toy trunk. And the young girl ended up suffocating and dying. And it was one of the worst scenes. It was one of the worst cases that just tugs at your heart. But what really affected me was a few weeks later when, you know, he was saying he didn't do it. And, of course, he had the defense attorney. And one of their first arguments, it became clear that they were going to say that she put herself into the trunk, closed it, and locked it. And so I had to go back over to the medical examiner's office, and I had to place, there was a couple of detectives and a crime scene photographer to document this properly for court purposes, but we had to place this young girl's body back into the trunk and do it in different ways, take different pictures, open and close the trunk repeatedly to make sure that we were showing that it was not possible, and it wasn't possible for her to have done what he said she did. And later, he ended up getting sentenced to a long time in prison, as he justly deserved. But that is a day that I can easily say that, and the death of one of our officers that I attended his autopsy, David Uribe, the two most difficult days of my career, and it has stuck with me over the years. When you see that with a child, cops are human. We talk about it all the time, and cops have families, cops have children, cops have emotions. They have anxiety, depression, fears, anger. You feel, and I went through that entire range of emotions in that hour, and it's been 13 years, and I still think about it often.
Yeah, and I'm so glad you prefaced that every officer has different types of effects. Like with mine, it was the shooting, having been shot at. I've been stabbed. I've been shot at 3 times in my career. And the one that really was horrific was right out of a nightmare. It was a bank robbery where I found the bad guys, something we all, as cops, love to do. In fact, I remember sending a message when I was responding to their call, "I'm going to get them." And I did find him. And we got in a shootout. It was like, you know, one of those out of the movies, a shootout at OK Corral. The only difference was he wasn't going down. He was so jacked on drugs that had no effect. That nightmare just became so real to me. And
yeah, why won't this end?
Yeah, I've shot him. As I hear the bullets hitting all around me, I know eventually he's going to get lucky. I was a better shot because we're trained as police officers, but he wasn't going down. And that nightmare has lived with me even today, you know, 20 years later, having those nightmares of having my gun and the bad guy coming at me and my gun is shooting to the left or to the right, the barrel is bent, all sorts of weird, bizarre things because of those sort of things. And again, that's just one incident that, you know, we have so many officers out there that something in between, you know.
Oh, of course. You go, yeah. When you're going through a 10, 20, 30 year
thank you.
Career, and the dangerous thing about, you brought it up, nightmares, is clearly things worked out for you. Here you sit,
I survived
healthy
it.
And happy. Nightmares, it doesn't always let the scenario play out the way it really did. It's,
thank you.
It's the what ifs
yeah.
and the what could have been, and those are the ones that affect us the most. And then you wake up and you're like, God dang it. It just, you're full of that anxiety and yeah. the stress.
And you also mentioned something early on that was spot on as well, talking about the families, because many times it's the families that will see the difference in their husband or their wife or their father. And they're the ones that also need a conduit, someone to reach out to. So there's a lot of great organizations. And the nice thing about irishangel.info is that when you go there, it can get you resources to the area where you live. For example, here in the Arizona or the greater Phoenix Valley, we have PISTOL, which is post-incident stress in law enforcement. And there's organizations like that across the globe, definitely across our country. And irishangel.info will get you to the right resource for that.
Yes. And another part of that we have in law enforcement, we're such type A and, you're supposed to be tough and you're supposed to be this,
John
that,
Wayne.
And the other. And it's okay to be vulnerable. It's okay to ask for help. You can't be
especially
scared.
From your family.
I mean, people frustrate me because if I have a headache, I take ibuprofen. It's that simple. I'm not kidding. If you need help, if you're having these issues, if you are feeling fear and anger and depression, anxiety that you just don't typically think you should be feeling, then reach out and get some help, especially in the law enforcement career, because you're right. There are tons of organizations that are waiting to help you.
Especially now. More now than ever, because unfortunately the problem is more now than ever. When we talk about stress in law enforcement, it absolutely is horrific. But can you imagine having, and I'm going to segue here and transition to another topic. Can you imagine having that stress as a young child, being afraid, having that nightmare, the kind of like nightmare I talked about, and yet we have that because of social media. What I'm talking about is this Momo challenge. And have you heard about this, Jason?
Unfortunately, this kind of stuff drives me crazy, and it just is a constant, beautiful reminder that I grew up in the 80s, which was not only the greatest music decade, but also I didn't have to put up with any of this stuff. Nobody was sending me these invites over social media. Nobody was freaking me out with crazy videos and stuff, so I hate when I see this.
Yeah, what I have here is various articles I've kind of researched over the last week. Police and schools are issuing warnings to parents on social media after a popular WhatsApp, and that's one word, WhatsApp, challenge has resurfaced in the United Kingdom. The Momo game, or the Momo challenge, gained international recognition last summer and was initially considered a hoax. In fact, CNN, one of theirs, on March 1st, we're just talking, a couple weeks ago, parents, and this is their headline, parents, please stop freaking out over the Momo challenge. And again, unfortunately, sometimes media does get it wrong, because as it was a hoax at one time, it's transitioned into something, unfortunately, very, very, very real. The hoax quickly becoming widespread. In August 2018, law enforcement investigated the influence of Momo on the death of a 12-year-old girl. I want to say she was a girl in Argentina, which then began worrying parents globally. When children participate in the challenge, this is information now from the article, they contact a stranger concealing themselves as, quote, Momo, unquote, using a creepy image, which if you haven't seen it, trust me, just go to it. You can't help but.
And once you see it, you won't forget it.
You won't. In fact, the image was created by a Japanese artist back in, I want to say, early 2000. And it has since been destroyed, but unfortunately, it's been digitized and now is the face, if you will, of Momo. And it encourages participants, kids again, to complete various tasks if they want to avoid being cursed. Some of the tasks include self-harm, which this Momo character asks the children to provide photographic evidence in order to continue this, quote, game. Ultimately, the game ends with Momo telling these kids to take their own life. And you heard me right. This disturbing, horrible creature that somebody has more from this Japanese work of art is trying to get children to take their life. Again, the article continues, a huge number of children are being exposed to suggestions about how to kill yourself. And not just requesting or encouraging, but actual instructions. The moment will come on and actually tell the kids what items they can use to hurt themselves. Another article from Kane County Sheriff issues warning that the Momo Challenge video is urging children to harm themselves and is popping up in spam. Sheriff Ron Haynes now firsthand about the internet video called because his son received the video and a creepy image. Quote, I can attest to it, the sheriff said. Quote, it's incredibly scary. The Momo Challenge threatens children by telling them that if they don't do these things, like light the stove, blow it out, and then light a match. If you don't do these things, then the Momo character is telling these children that they will show up at their school and harm them, or show up at while they're sleeping and harm them, causing these children to have the most horrific nightmares.
Yeah, once you see the picture of this thing, especially as a child, when you don't feel like you can defend yourself the right way or you're easily impressed by something like this, it is a scary, scary image. And I don't like that headline, and I'm not knocking on the network, but as a parent, don't tell me what I can and can't freak out about. When you're freaking out about something, it's in protection of your kids, and you're not about to say what you.
Robin said it perfectly before the show. Robin said, you know what? When it comes to your children, you can't overreact. You know, you have to be prepared. Right. And we talked about this. What was happening is that, unfortunately, not just CNN, but like YouTube came out, and YouTube expressly stated, there is no evidence of this. And immediately after they put that out, there was YouTube footage of a parent filming their children, because we love filming our children. Uh-huh. They're filming their child watching this really cute YouTube video on TV when completely unexpectedly the Momo Challenge came out. So right in the middle of this sweet little kind of like how to make, you know, brownies or something silly, you know, for the kids. I can't remember what the video was of the child, but it was one child showing other children how to do cute things. And right, it all suddenly it shows up, almost like out of a horror movie. You see this image of this Momo creature. It's a weirdly bug-eyed, almost like The Ring, if you remember The Ring.
Yeah.
It's kind of like that.
Movie.
And she starts talking about, you know, if your parents aren't in the room, I need you to go and find the following things. And, oh, you can cut yourself. And it's just so creepy. And this parent filming this caught it on video. So she could tell YouTube, no, you're wrong. And YouTube has since came out and said there is images. Again, what can start as a hoax can then turn into copycat. So what we have is these losers, I call them lonely losers, that are sitting in their mother's basement with nothing better to do than play with their ugly tools of the trade and try to reach out and hurt people. And so our rallying cry, you jump on board here, Jason, anytime, is parents, you need to watch what your kids are doing on the internet, not just as it relates to their social media, making sure there's not a predator, some type of pedophile that's trying to target them, pretending to be a little girl wanting to meet them. And having worked sex crimes, I'm telling you, it happens so often. It just makes me want to cry. But also as it relates to YouTube and these other shows, because if they're on the internet, they can be affected. It's not like the days when I was young and you were young, Jason, where we sit around the TV and we're watching ABC, you know, after school special. Now the kids today are watching internet on their devices, and these things can be tampered with.
Yeah, and, you know, from my perspective, kids are going to trust their parents. I have always taken the approach, you can't be scared to talk to your kids about anything. I know from when I was a child, I wouldn't, again, growing up when I did, I didn't, I could be off on my ATC out of, you know, all day on a Saturday for 8 hours. Nobody knew where I was. No way to get a hold of me. And kids don't have that trust and safety factor anymore. But I don't tend to go through my kids' phones, and they don't give me a reason not to trust them. But I'm open about talking to them about things like this. Like when I hear things about the Slender Men. Remember when that came out? And that
thank you. Same exact
those
scenario.
Those two young girls murdered.
Yes, they
and
did.
Then they, and that image was so damn creepy, it wasn't even funny. And I talked about that. I talked about the Momo Challenge. I talk about, and if even just asking my kids, hey, you're not stupid enough to eat a Tide Pod, are you? And then they look at me like, no, Dad, I'm really not. Well, we need to talk about it because there's hundreds of kids that are stupid enough to do it, and they're getting sick. I just think as a parent, if you talk and have open dialogue and give them the reassurance of what's right, what's wrong, what's real, what's fake, and they'll be a lot safer.
Yeah, we had a five-year-old child that called 911 after watching it. If you Google this, as a five-year-old little boy, he was at home by himself watching YouTube when this image came on, and he dialed 911. You know why I say to that? Good for him.
Good for him. Yeah, it would take a lot of bravery to call 911 at that age.
Yeah, and because he was so scared. And it kind of harkens to the young lady who was prodding her boyfriend or ex-boyfriend to kill himself. She's, you know, she was on trial for assisting homicide. It's a crime. So parents, realize what this is, report it, and take the internet back. Well, that wraps it up for that segment of Cop Talk. And now my favorite segment is coming up next, where I get to listen to Jason's inspirational thoughts.
We're going to do a little stupid suspect and heroic.
Yeah, I got to throw in some
first.
Stupid so, Darren
yeah,
stuff,
yeah,
sure.
And I have a great heroic story for today. So
love it.
More stories, inside guests, and true blue humor coming up on Batch Boys. We'll be back right after this.
I remember the moment.
I'll never forget that moment.
As long as I live.
As long as I live.
Several of us were working to rescue a family.
The house collapsed on top of the cellar door and trapped them.
We had to use Humvees and heavy machinery to move massive trees and debris.
We got them out.
We helped a lot of people out.
It felt good to know I could really make a difference.
Because I'm a citizen soldier in the National Guard.
Be there the moment your community needs you. Learn more at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the Arizona National Guard. Aired by the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
Move over, AZ. Arizona's move over law requires you to move over or slow down when you drive past any vehicle pulled over with flashing lights. Remember, every vehicle, every time. Move over, AZ.
Sponsored by ADA in partnership with the Arizona Broadcasters Association and this station.
You're listening to Batch Boys with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Now, back to the Batch Boys.
And like I said, this is absolutely my favorite segment. I love them all, but anything that has Jason talking about inspirational moments, I just love it. But before we get to that, we have a heroic headlines. And Jason, your heroic headlines are just absolutely out of the park. They're all home runs.
Well,
and you got something special today, do you not?
I do, and in keeping with our talk with Amanda, that we are going to stay across the pond for this one, and bear with me on this story, because the clincher and the poetic reason why this is a heroic story is something that I will say at the very end. This is about the extraordinary moment that a newly qualified police officer dove into a freezing river to save a man's life. Police Constable Muhammad Nadim, who is still on his 2-year probation period with the Greater Manchester Police, jumped into the river in Irwell in Bury, Lancashire, I'm probably not saying that right, on Saturday afternoon after a member of the public fell into the water and got into some difficulties. The dean managed to get the man, grab hold of him, and drag him to safety. The fast-flowing and deep water was said to be close to freezing when the officer risked his life. The man was treated by paramedics, taken to the hospital, and will make a full recovery. Describing the incident, the spokesperson for that police department said that a River Irwell got a report of concerns of the welfare of a man who had fallen into the river. They got there on scene, and without thinking about it, Officer Nadim jumped into the river off of an 8-foot drop, swam towards the man, grabbed him, and drug him to safety. And the reason that this is such a heroic story, there's a lot of reasons.
First of all, the officer risked his life for a member of the public, which is what police officers do. It is why they signed up for the job. It is why they take the oath of office. But the reason this is such a heroic story is Officer Nadim cannot swim.
Wow. Wow.
He cannot swim. He jumped into this freezing water, was able to find a way. And we talk about this, fight or flight syndrome, adrenaline. It is, you have no idea what you're capable of. And then you get in. And I'm sure when it was over, he was like, wow, I can't believe I just did that. I'm sure he was very humble about it. I'm sure he was scared when it was over, when the butterflies hit, when the adrenaline dumps. But what an incredible hero. Thank you so much for your service over there and bringing respect to all of us around the world that wear the uniform.
You know, it kind of reminds me of the mother, Mother Bear, you know, protecting your child. You just do whatever it takes. And whatever this officer and many good officers out there, most officers out there, have that same desire to protect the public like a mother bear. And as beautiful and as special and as lovely as that is, the best of humanity, I'm going to take us in the opposite direction. The worst in humanity. I'm going to talk a little bit about our stupid suspect stories. I got two. The first one is on March 1st, around 7:30 p.m., Phoenix police respond to a burglary call at an apartment near 51st Avenue and Indian School Road. When the officer arrived at the location, he saw the suspect, later identified as 31-year-old. And you notice that when we talk about stupid suspects, they always have a middle name. We always put the middle name out there.
Oh, of course, got a middle name.
I love that.
Got a middle name.
Yeah, so Jerry Christopher Drain, standing on the front balcony of an apartment that wasn't his. Police say that Drain had an odor of alcohol. Again,
shocker.
I'm shocked. Have you? It's completely shocked. Wow, alcohol. Who would have thought? He had alcohol on his breath when he spoke. He had bloodshot, watery eyes. He had a slurred speech, much like I do right now. And he was unable to stand straight without swaying on the balcony. Okay? One of the two roommates had told police that they woke up and could smell something burning in their kitchen. When they walked into their kitchen to, you know, take a look and check it out, they saw this guy, Drain, standing there, eating soup and attempting, I do mean attempting, to cook tortillas on the top of the electric stove with a pan. I'm not going to say who the victim is. I'd rather throw down the suspect.
Of course.
Yeah. But the victim said, quote, he tried to cook like three of them. We're talking about their tortillas here, because the first two had completely burnt. So we had this drunk idiot walking into an apartment, cooking tortillas and burning them. Quote this shocked homeowner, I smelled the burning, she explained. So we both got up, her and her roommate. I was like, hey, what's going on? Trying to have a friendly conversation, trying to keep everything calm with this weird guy. Quote, during all that was happening, the roommate and I, we first noticed he had some sort of pocket knife, but we were smart enough to say nothing about it. Good for them. We always talk about trust your intuition, have a plan in place. They saw the threat. They saw this pocket knife. We take a stupid suspect story that could have very quickly turned into a horrific situation. They remained calm. They kind of calmed him while he's cooking, like maybe, you know, giving him a tipping cooking tips, maybe how not to burn your tortillas. And they kept him calm as the police responded. The roommates didn't recognize him and had never seen him before. And they had asked him to leave with whatever he was cooking, take the food and go. But no, he didn't. He left the area with a can of soup and the tortillas, the burnt tortillas, as well as the one that was almost not burnt. But he stayed there on the front balcony just enjoying his meal. It was a can of some sort of potato cheese broccoli chowder, one of the victims said. And then they followed up with, I hate chowder. So for that, I'm kind of grateful. That is my stupid suspect story. And again, I got to throw out the name because I love to throw out these stupid suspects. Jerry Christopher Drain, thank you for being so stupid and remaining on the property. And now this takes me to a stupid selfie. This made national news. I'm sure both of you, I'm talking to Robin and Jason,
yeah.
I think you know what I'm talking about, the stupid selfie story. This happened here in Arizona. A woman suffered serious injuries to her arm after being attacked by a jaguar at the World Zoo outside Phoenix. The woman was attempting to take a selfie when the animal reached out and swiped at her, according to Rural Metro Fire. Now, what's interesting about this is I happen to know this for a fact. Jaguars hate selfies. Yeah, they do. They take complete exception to having a selfie. You know, they didn't. And this was a new Jaguar. On a serious note, this was a new Jaguar, new at the pen. This woman, and I will give her kudos. She came back and apologized for action. That's why I will not say her name. She absolutely went back to the World Life Zoo and apologized for her actions, because her actions were this. She wanted to take this really close selfie with the Jaguar. So she breached the concrete wall. Walls are usually there for a reason.
But I would say barriers have a purpose.
Yes, yes. And one at a zoo.
Respect them.
Has an important purpose. Yes. Deep, yes. Deep. There's a reason for that wall.
Yes.
She crawled over the wall, and then there's this like 4 foot, 5 foot barrier distance to the cage. And again, this cage isn't like, I don't know, petting friendly. It's not a petting zoo, not with jaguars. But so she gets right up against the slats. And yeah, jaguars are smart enough to reach through and absolutely attacked her. Bless her heart. And I mean that, as stupid of a selfie as it was, I'm so glad that she could have been, you know, like we saw in Las Vegas with the magicians, you know, with the attack. You know, she could have been killed.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely could have been
killed.
Well,
those two people fell off the cliff at Yosemite not too long ago, and they just showed the last picture that was taken of them taking a selfie. You got to be, I know we all want to make memories, but good Lord.
No, live life. Don't take stupid selfies. And this is the stupid suspect story into a stupid selfie. So again, remember.
Did you hear her excuse though? She actually admitted what she did, and then she turned around on the news and said, "I didn't cross the barrier. I just leaned over it." You cross the barrier. It's a skyline barrier. You go over it. Yeah, I'm sorry. No, do not put the leopard down. You went in its territory.
And you know what? As stupid as that was and everything, you know what was really neat about this? And we're going almost into a heroic headline, is one of the people watching, a woman, grabbed a water bottle and threw it at the jaguar, which divided his attention. He grabbed the water, maybe he wanted some water, you know, and kind of let go enough where she was able to be pulled away by other bystanders. So you, all you guys out there that saw this and that weren't just so excited to, you know, grab some video YouTube fodder, but actually went there to help her, kudos to you. That is a heroic headline and a stupid selfie story mixed.
Yeah, it's a graphic video, that's for sure. And I will admit my first thought was maybe she paid the jaguar to attack her, but.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it was racial motivated. It might have been a black jaguar. And this is a perfect time for an inspirational moment. We go from great heroic headlines to really stupid acts and stupid suspects. And we got to end it on an upbeat, inspirational moment from our very own Jason Checkerlane. You do have a very good inspirational message, do you not, my friend?
Yeah, I just want to give people some simple life advice, and of course you don't have to take it, but
sometimes the simple is the best, isn't it?
Yeah, and it works. It certainly does. And you know, a lot of people don't understand. You look at me, you've heard my story, you know my situation, my appearance, being burned as bad as I was, going through all that, my eyesight that I struggle with crazy, the loss of half of my fingers, all those three things, they're meaningless. Not a part of it bothers me. All these years later, at my age and everything, I deal with the same anxieties and the same stress and the same fears and the same angers and the same day-to-day, how do I find inspiration and something to move forward? And I really have learned to just simplify it, because we tend to wake up in the morning and, all right, here's what my day is going to be. Does your day ever go the way you think that it's going to go? No. Something's going to interrupt it. There's going to be a speed bump. There's going to be a diversion, and it's going to cause a negative reaction. You have to fight against that. But I would encourage people, wake up in the morning and ask yourself three simple questions. And if you can answer these questions at the end of the day before you go to bed, it's going to make a huge difference. And the first one for me is, when I wake up, how can I grow? What can I do today to better myself? Mentally, spiritually, physically, do something. Big or small. There is no, it doesn't have to be something specific. It can be numerous things. The second thing is, what can I give? And again, you don't have to go out and donate $100 to a charity. You don't have to volunteer 8 hours of your time. I'm talking about give somebody a smile who might need it. I'm talking about put your phone down and give one of your children the attention they deserve when they're asking you a question. Give somebody the respect by showing up somewhere on time. The simple little things. And the last one for me is, what can I celebrate? And I don't care who you are or what you're going through, every single day you can find something to celebrate. And I promise you, if you think about those questions in the morning and you have answers for them at the end of the night, you will be shocked at how you watch yourself grow. It is a beautiful, beautiful process, and it carries me through each and every day. I had three of those this morning. I will have them answered tonight, and I will have three brand new questions for myself tomorrow. Thank you, everybody. God bless, and we will see you and talk to you next week.
Batch Boys. Thanks for listening to Batch Boys. Stories, insights, guests, and true blue humor with retired police sergeant Darren Birch and retired police officer Jason Schechterly. Batch Boys, heard weekly and worldwide on Star Worldwide networks and all mobile devices. Batch Boys.